What is cyclic homology? Well, I mean, you have an algebra, A, associative unital algebra over any field, and you associate these functors to it, called cyclic homology groups of A. In the first case, they are indexed by non-negative integers. In the second case, they are just periodic, and so they are indexed by 0 and 1. And to get a feeling for these groups, you have to think about, I mean, what's the first one? The first one is really A divided by space of all spanned by commutators of A in A. So it's something that's closely related to traces on A. It's some kind of pre-dual to space of traces on A, and it gives you the feeling that cyclic homology is really the theory of higher traces. These cyclic co-cycles or cycles, they are really higher traces or pre-duals to higher traces. And also, it sort of motivates this statement here. It's a theorem, in fact, that HCI is a non-abelian drive functor of the functor that we have up there, the functor from algebras to vector spaces that sends an algebra to A over the commutator of A and A. Of course, this is a highly non-abelian category, so you have to do a little more work in order to justify this, but this is a theorem and is proved sort of in earlier stages of the theory by Fagin and Tegan. There is, as I said, there's a periodic version of this, and it has quite a geometric topological meaning. To understand that, one of the main, first main results that convince people that it's an important theory is that Kant proved for algebra of smooth functions on a smooth manifold, the periodic cyclic homology is really just direct sums of Drom groups. So you have all the Drom groups appeared as periodic cyclic homology groups. So this is a non-commutative, really a non-commutative analog of Drom cohomology, if you like. And then we have the Chern character in non-commutative geometry. This is a theory that has been developed in earlier stages again. There are maps from the K groups, which were known long before cyclic homology was discovered, from K0 of A to cyclic homology groups and periodic cyclic homology groups. And under those isomorphisms up there, it reduces to a standard Chern character. So we know that, again, we are in good grounds because this is a theory that sort of extends theory of characteristic classes in the commutative smooth case. All right, so now how to define these cyclic homology groups for algebras first? Well, now the thing is, there are many ways, of course. Now, there's a good way, that's theory of cyclic modules. So the cyclic module is a simplicial module endowed with action of cyclic groups of various orders on the nth term, on the nth component. And there are some relations that should be satisfied between the cyclic generators of the cyclic group actions, tau n, and the phase and degeneracies. It doesn't concern us for the moment, but this theory is, again, has been developed by Kahn in 1983. And after 15 years, some really new fantastic applications of this again has been found in recent years. So I'll go back to that soon. But so if we have a cyclic module, so HMN is a vector space or a K module, then you can define its cyclic homology. Essentially, you take the ordinary simplicial operator B, but that's not good. That only gives you something which is close to Hochschild homology and this thing. So you go from MN to a space of co-invariants, dividing by the action of the cyclic groups, and it's remarkable that this operator B descends to this space of co-invariants. This was not, unnoticed. I mean, it was kind of, it's not very difficult, although it's not that easy either, but it's just remarkable that it descends to this space of co-invariants, and its homology is just cyclic homology of that cyclic module. So I can sort of very briefly show the situation from category of algebras. Now we go to category of cyclic modules, and we have this functor, cyclic homology functors. So that's how cyclic, one way to define cyclic homology of algebras, associative algebras. So what is the cyclic module associated to an algebra? That's essentially the Hochschild module, but then there is action of the cyclic group, which in this case is not difficult. It's just the rotation of the tensors. Okay, so this is for that. Now, cyclic cohomology of Hopf algebras was discovered by Kahn and Moscovici in 1988 through some elaborate considerations, which I don't want to go through right now. And then, but this theory is a little bit like a continuous cohomology. You see, when you have continuous cohomology of topological groups, if it's compact, it's trivial. And if this quantum group, Hopf algebra, admits a R measure, then the theory is trivial again. So that forces us to develop a dual theory, and the dual theory has been defined, and it works. It's as nice as the original one, except that each of them works in different categories, so to speak, and they are valuable in different categories. After that, then there was this thing about cyclic cohomology of Hopf algebras, which is the title of this talk. I'll start talking about that shortly. Now, so let me just again briefly recall the cyclic cohomology a la Kahn-Moscovici for Hopf algebras. So the idea is that you have a Hopf algebra, and in case S squared is identity, the square of the antipode is identity, things are easier, and there is a cyclic moduli associated with that, although the definition of cyclic moduli is not easy at all. I mean, it's not something that comes to mind that easily at all. But if S squared is not identity, you have to twist the antipode by some extra gadgets. It's called modular pair in involution. It essentially consists of a character and a co-character, a group-like element. They satisfy some conditions, so that the thing that we define a little later turns out to be a cyclic module. I mean, essentially the condition is tau n to the n plus 1 should be identity for all n. That's the necessary and sufficient condition that forces these modularity conditions that appear here. So what is this cyclic module associated, or in fact a co-cyclic module associated to Hopf algebra? It is like this. So the nth part is H tensor N. Unlike algebras where A tensor N plus 1, now this is H tensor N, so one dimension reduction already appears here. The differentials are really co-algebra differentials, Hochschild co-algebra differentials, but tau N is really something, there's a very non-trivial formula for tau N. You apply this twisted antipode to H1 of these components, apply the power of the co-product n minus 1 times, and then use the module action on this tensor. So then to say that tau n to the n plus 1 is equal to identity is quite a feat, in fact, that such a thing is true. And it is true. The proof is long, and there are various proofs now, in fact, there are various ways to understand the whole theory, in fact. So one way to understand this theory for cyclic homology, or cohomology rather, of Hopf algebras is the original motivations for Kahn and Moscovici, that's existence of a characteristic map. So by this, we mean the following. Anytime your Hopf algebra acts on something, on an algebra, there should exist a characteristic map relating cohomology, the cohomology, the sought after cohomology of the Hopf algebra, the thing that you're looking for, should be a map from this unknown cohomology to cyclic cohomology of A. And anytime there is a trace that's invariant under the action of the Hopf algebra. Now, the experience in non-commutative geometry has been that these maps existed for action of groups and for action of Lie algebras, and they are closely related to characteristic maps in non-commutative, I mean, in the commutative case. These are really some non-trivial co-cycles here. Some Chern classes, for example, Chern characters, for example, appear this way in one interpretation of those invariants. So there should be a morphism of co-cyclic modules. And with some work, then you arrive at the theory of Kahn and Moscovici and the identity tau n to the n plus 1 equal to identity. There is a alternative approach which is based on something we call invariant cyclic homology, and this is you see this cohomology theory for Hopf algebras is exactly like the computations even show that this is similar to Lie algebra cohomology and group cohomology. But the philosophy that was discussed in the last lecture, in fact, it's quite apparent here. So in this case, if we have cyclic homology corresponding to Durham, and we know that there is something, in fact, defined by Chevalier and Eilenberg called invariant Durham cohomology, and they show that invariant Durham cohomology gives rise to Lie algebra cohomology. So if we have an invariant cyclic homology, can we derive this cyclic homology of Hopf algebras? So that was our original idea, and it worked. It seems that it turns out that you can define this invariant cyclic homology for when your Hopf algebra acts on an algebra. You can define this theory, and you can prove that if you let H act on itself through right translations, through either product or co-product, there are two cases, then you get back this either of those theories, depending on if you start with action or co-action of H on itself as module algebra or co-module algebra. Or co-module algebra, module co-algebra, yeah. So that this theory exists, and this paper is already in the net. It's posted since a couple of months now. So now Hopf algebraoid. So this is kind of general background. So I have about 10 minutes, or rather maybe 15 minutes to talk about Hopf algebraoids and what we did with Hopf algebraoids. First of all, for Hopf algebraoids, one should not forget that there is no general, universally accepted notion of Hopf algebraoids. I mean, it's a there are many definitions for Hopf algebraoids or bi-algebraoids. So, so our starting point was Hopf algebraoids in the sense of Lu seems to be something that at least you can do something with it. So the general idea, of course, is that Hopf algebraoids to Hopf algebras are like groupoids to groups, or like Lie algebraoids to Lie algebras. Okay, so first of all, a bi-algebraoid is we have this groupoid or quantized groupoid, algebra of functions on this space of morphisms and algebra of quantized functions on the space of objects. So you have a grand algebra H corresponds to the bigger one, an algebra H R, which is the base algebra, and you have homomorphisms corresponding to source and target maps, and you have some conditions which most of them are natural, some of them are not natural and are forced by in order to be able to do something. Sometimes you have to assume that you go into the centers, you have to assume that things commute, otherwise you can do things. These are things that you cannot see by going back to the commutative case, of course, because in the commutative case everything commutes, so they're not so it's not very easy to come up with the right set of axioms here. Anyhow, then we have this notion of bi-algebraoids, we have the notion of Hopf algebraoid, there's a map S. And Kahn Moscovici, they sort of had to use a similar construction for a particular Hopf algebraoid that they had. And it wasn't clear if a similar construction can be done for arbitrary Hopf algebraoids, or what are the sort of necessary gadgets that you can apply this cohomological construction to it. So we sort of, I think we discovered a structure, we call it extended Hopf algebra, which is like this. You see, the difficulty is, one of the difficulties is this, S squared is not identity in general. So we have to replace it by something like a twist of this S, which is square is identity. In the Hopf algebraic case, that's not very easy. So we axiomatize the existence of this twist. Not the twist, but this deformation of S. So we say that from the beginning we have a pair like S and S tilde, call it antipode pair, and they satisfy conditions that exactly makes that cyclic module work. The cyclic module that I define, the analog of this in this case, work. And we call it an extended Hopf algebra. So some Hopf algebraoids are extended Hopf algebras, some aren't, and there is not a kind of inclusive relations between the two. But many examples are extended Hopf algebras. Now, there is a subtlety here. Maybe category theorists or Hopf algebraists can help, And the subtlety is that these twists that are, you know, the things, because we are over the non-commutative ring R, these are problematic. I mean, this is a killer in the non-commutative case. Okay, they're not well defined. So what we do, we show that, we postulate that the identities that we want make sense in our cases, and they just, in our examples, they just make sense. Otherwise, I don't know how to take care of, sort of a theoretical framework where the twists work over, or well-defined over, non-commutative tensor products. But that's something, I guess, it's a part of complications here. So there are some examples of Hopf algebraids. Basically, one example I want to show you, I think there will be a talk about this kind of structure, namely the universal enveloping algebra of Lie-Reinhardt algebras. There will be a talk, by Hoopsman about this Lie-Reinhardt algebras. Anyhow, these are generalizations of Lie algebras, if you like. Well, you have a ground ring, which is, and the bracket is not linear over R, but it fails in such a way that it's still the cohomology of Lie algebra complex, the Chevalier-Eilenberg complex, works for these things. And the universal algebra construction also works. And these things, these universal enveloping algebras of Lie-Reinhardt algebras, are examples of extended Hopf algebras in our sense. The algebra of functions on the group algebra of a groupoid. It provided, for example, in the simplest case, if there are finite, this is over a finite base, they form a Hopf algebra, an extended Hopf algebra. The algebra of functions on the quantum torus, for example, is the non-commutative torus, is an extended Hopf algebra. Again, this is a deformation of a Hopf algebra, namely functions on the torus, but it's not a Hopf algebra itself, but it's a Hopf algebra. But it's not so surprising because this corresponds to a groupoid. In fact, it's algebra functions on a groupoid. So it's in this example 3-4 is not so surprising. Okay, so then we have this idea, of the problem of defining cyclic cohomology of extended Hopf algebras. Essentially, the formulas are the same as before. But the work to show that, you have a cyclic, or rather co-cyclic module in this case, is much more involved. And this is because you don't have all the identities that you want. I mean, you have to be very, very careful with the conditions. But it works. So it gives you a co-cyclic module. And so you have a cohomology theory for extended Hopf algebras, or some classes of Hopf algebraids at least, provided this antipode pair SNS still exists. So the next step is to convince ourselves that this is a nice theory, is a relevant theory. I just talked about cohomology of, the simplest case, cohomology of Lie-Reinhardt algebras. First computation we did was that, in fact, if you apply this cohomology, periodic cohomology theory, to universal enveloping algebras of Lie-Reinhardt algebras, you get cohomology of ordinary cohomology of Lie-Reinhardt algebra, which is, as I said, is the analog of Lie algebra cohomology, or homology in this case. And this result was known before for the case of Lie algebras and universal enveloping algebras, and the proof is not very different from the case of Hopf algebras. So now, if you know about Lie-Reinhardt algebras, you know that, for example, algebra of differential operators on a manifold is an example of universal enveloping algebra of Lie-Reinhardt algebra. So this gives a computation. This computation was done in a special case in Karl Moscovici paper, but this seems to be much more general case now. You can do it. Now I want to end the talk with one interesting example. Okay, another thing is, in this case, is that I said at the beginning, if we have a Hopf algebra where there is a Haar integral on it, a finite normalized Haar integral on it, then cohomology, in the sense of Kahn-Moscovici, vanishes, but our homology doesn't vanish necessarily. A similar phenomenon happens for Hopf algebraids. Okay, for groupoids, you know how to formulate the idea of Haar measure, they're called Haar systems. So we can define a notion of Haar system for bi-algebraids, and show that if they admit a Haar system, then this cohomology is essentially trivial. And this is the case where, for example, for the non-commutative torus, where they admit a Haar system. Now, the final example, which I want to draw your attention to, is something we called it from covers to Hopf algebraids. Now, so if you have a topological space and a finite open cover of this topological space, and if you have a sheaf of commutative algebras over the over your topological space and a finite open cover of your space, then you can define one of these extended Hopf algebras. How? The base is the direct sum of sections of this open set, and H is direct sums of sections of intersections, UI intersection UJ. Then those maps, target and source maps in our picture, correspond to inclusion of UI intersection UJ into UI and UI intersection UJ into UJ. And these tensor products over R, the bimodule tensor products over R, correspond, easily seen here, to direct sums of intersections over, of sections over higher intersections. Now the coproduct in this case, I said it's a Hopf algebraic, so what's the coproduct? Of course the product is obvious, it's the original product of commutative algebra, so it's a commutative Hopf algebraic, but the coproduct comes from these triple intersections going to double intersections. And the antipode, it's just switching the indices here. Then the complex, the coalgebra complex that you have, it turns out, is exactly the check complex for this sheaf with respect to this cover. So the Hochschild part, the coalgebraic Hochschild part of the complex that gives cyclic cohomology of this extended Hopf algebra, is exactly the sheaf cohomology with respect to the cover. So the question is then, what is the cyclic homology of this reason action? And there is a general theorem, although we don't prove it here, I think we certainly have it in the case of commutative Hopf algebras, and we believe this is true, although I'm not, I haven't checked all the tests, believe this is true in the case of commutative Hopf algebraids, that cyclic cohomology decomposes as direct sums of Hochschild cohomology. This is something that's definitely the case for the case of Hopf algebras, and I believe this is true for Hopf algebraids. So in this case, one can say that we definitely know the cyclic cohomology for these types of extended Hopf algebras coming from sheaves of algebras and covers. And this sort of opens up relations with a lot of different things. I mean, now that I'm sure there are relations with orbifold cohomologies, and there should be relations with theory of stacks and non-commutative stacks, all these things. Now this is sort of beginning of this, sort of shows its relevance here. So hopefully we'll pursue that not very lately. Okay, not very late. Okay, so I just will finish here. Yeah.